It's that time of year again. My schedule is packed with bracket-busting, three-point shooting, nonstop basketball action. I don't want to miss a second of it, and I find myself staying up late to catch all the action. I can't be dragging the next morning. That's why I go for a 5-hour energy shot. They're perfect for my days packed with back-to-back games or when my favorite team is playing late. With over 15 flavors to choose from, like watermelon, tropical burst, blue raspberry, peach mango, and more, there's a flavor for everyone. On their website, you have the option to build your own 12-pack or 24-pack and have it delivered right to your door. And if you're out and about, you can always pick up a 5-hour energy shot at your local grocery or convenience store. They're everywhere. 5-hour energy keeps me going during the broadcast and the next morning when I need to get myself up and to work. Visit 5hourenergy.com for great deals and to stock up before the next tip-off.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive. Most of you aren't just listening right now. You're driving, cleaning, and even exercising. But what if you could be saving money by switching to Progressive? Drivers who save by switching save nearly $750 on average. And auto customers qualify for an average of 7 discounts. Multitask right now. Quote today at Progressive.com. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. National average 12-month savings of $744 by new customers surveyed who saved with Progressive between June 2022 and May 2023. Potential savings will vary. Discounts not available in all states and situations.
True North stores have Primo Eats and Pepsi brand products that are heavy on taste and light on your wallet. Right now, buy any Primo sandwich and add a 20-ounce Pepsi brand beverage for just $1. Handmade every day, Primo uses quality meats and cheeses. Complete the meal with a Pepsi. Grab any Primo sandwich and pair it with a 20-ounce Pepsi brand beverage for just $1. Get more with the True Rewards mobile app. Available in your app store. True North convenience stores. Fast, friendly, clean.
Good morning and welcome into WEEI just after 11 a.m. here on Sunday, March the 23rd, 2025. I'm Dan Ball. Thanks for being here this morning on WEEI and across the WEEI Sports Radio Network. Hello to everybody joining us as well from Cape Cod, Providence, Springfield, Worcester, Portland, Maine, Keene, New Hampshire, Claremont, New Hampshire, and White River Junction, Vermont as well. If you want to get involved in the conversation at any point, it is 617-779-7937. That's your phone number to call and to text to join the conversation. I'll be with you for the next 2 hours here this morning into early afternoon before we send you into Red Sox baseball. Red Sox against the Minnesota Twins just after 1 p.m. and you'll catch that on the Shaw's and Star Market WEEI Red Sox Radio Network. Wrapping up the spring, still many musings about the Red Sox and their remaining roster decisions and more really depth chart related decisions that we'll get to later on in the show leading into Red Sox baseball, which will then be followed by coverage of second round action in March Madness during the rest of the afternoon into evening. It is myself and my good friend Jacob Lasner across the glass here this morning into afternoon. Jacob, a hello and good morning to you. How are you, my friend?
Hello and good morning to you as Dan. I am stressed.
You're stressed?
Yeah, I mean, BC, I don't know what's going
to
happen.
Yeah,
with
you
them
have some explaining to do, by the way, because I'm leading hockey, and you need to explain away why Ryan Leonard and company weren't good enough to win a Hockey East championship this year.
I mean, I think it's because of Cam Whitehead. He's the goalie for Northeastern. He stood on his head.
He made,
I think, 37 saves against BC and then followed it up with a performance where he made, I think, 57 saves against Maine.
Yeah, how about that?
In the next game. I mean, he was incredible, and he deserved that player of the tournament. They gave it to Albin Boya instead, who didn't get recognition for Hobie Baker nomination, which is just disgusting on the part of the college hockey in general. But
yeah,
he deserved that tournament MVP.
Yeah, no question about that. Well said. So I wanted to make sure that you got that stress out off the top of the show because I want to continue the conversation. And by the way, a heck of a job as always from the Sunday Skate crew. Great to hear Scott and Bridget and have Razor in studio today and hear their conversation about a Bruins team that, honestly, God bless them for having to cover for the remaining, whatever, 15, 16 games of the season because this group and Red Sox fans, you can sing along if you know this tune. Bruins fans will be talking more about players that aren't on the roster for the Boston Bruins for the rest of the season than they will players that are on the roster for the rest of the season. And that's why the conversation around this group has gone to the likes of Fabian Lysell and Georgi Mrkolov and the players that are supposed to be part of the quote-unquote future of the Bruins. And by the way, so I was sitting in the back studio listening to the end of the show and getting ready to go on. It's 2025. We're still throwing Tuukka Rask shade out at this point in history. Aren't we past that as a hockey society where we're for whatever reason going to hold Tuukka Rask's skates to the fire for the fact that he played on teams whose offenses decided to just shrivel up and die when the games mattered most? Have we looked at the actual numbers, the win totals, the save percentages, the actual quantifiable ways to decide how good or bad Tuukka Rask was? Was he a Hall of Famer? I don't know. And, of course, you're going to look at the resume and go, did he win a Stanley Cup as a starter? And the answer is going to be no. But aren't we past this as a group? I thought that we were, but I heard that, and it just put a bee under my bonnet to start this show. But I want to continue the conversation that they were having on Sunday Skate, and you can join. If you didn't get a chance to weigh in with them, we can continue the hockey conversation at 617-779-7937. We'll get to some of the calls that are still hanging on after their show. Talking about something that Andrew Raycroft brought up at the end of the 9 o'clock hour, which was the way that prospects are treated going from the AHL to the NHL and back, and how you have to earn the games that you're playing, and how Fabian Lysell, being a first rounder, that's the kind of resume item that gets him noticed and earns him some run with the Boston Bruins. I thought it was an interesting conversation to have when you look at the context of where this season is. The Bruins are no longer playing for anything other than a high draft pick. And what they end up doing with that draft pick, again, is still anybody's guess. I am firmly in the camp that I'm not sure the Boston Bruins are going to make that first round selection. I think at some point during the offseason, whatever assets were accumulated at that trade deadline, just understanding the way that Don Sweeney and Cam Neely have gone about trying to build their teams in the past, they have not shown the patience nor the propensity to sit back and draft and develop. And quite honestly, they're not good at it. So what I'm rooting for this offseason is you accumulated enough cap space to be active in free agency. That's great. I think they'll do that. Because season in and season out, and last year being the biggest example that we've seen in some time, Boston's been willing to hand out these type of contracts for the players that they believe will help them immediately. So I think that cap space is going to be put to good use, and I would not be surprised in the slightest to see some of the draft assets that were accumulated be turned around in trades for players that can help this team right away. And the reason I say that is, when they went through the debuild of this roster at the deadline this year, and you're talking about moving Coyle and Carlo and then Marchand at the end and Frederick before that and Justin Brazo, who, by the way, netted Murat Kuznetsov and additional pieces, this kid's got a little something. He's a fun player to watch. I didn't think of the five deals that were made at the deadline that the Brazo for Kuznetsov deal might end up being the one that we talk about the most on sports radio and on the Sunday Skate or on the Skate podcast. I did not think that was going to be the deal that got the most bluster, but here we are doing just that. Back to the point at hand. Each deal, for the most part, yes, it had draft capital that was involved, but there was also a player that could help the Boston Bruins in the present, or at least in 2025-26. Your Carlo deal had Minton. The Marchand deal, yes, was draft assets, but the Brazo deal, also a player involved. You had guys that were coming back in these deals that could help the team, which gave me the feeling of this is a retool. This is a rebuild of our depth in terms of our prospect depth. And this is an overall organizational retool that we got younger, we got more skilled, we got faster, and we'll be able to supplement some of these young pieces who are now cost-controlled and under contract for a bit with players that we acquire through free agency and via trade. I would not be surprised in the slightest to see that being the direction where the Bruins go. In the meantime, it's rough sledding. It really is. And it feels a bit disingenuous for me, a radio show host, to question a theory about call-ups and earning play time and things and playing time and things like this. And the argument that was happening in the 9 o'clock hour specific to Fabian Lizell, and I think you can excuse me, you can also extend that to other prospects in this organization. At this point, what do you really have to lose with giving guys opportunities who maybe wouldn't have earned it on a team that was competing for a playoff spot? Has Fabian Lizell's 34 points in the AHL this season really merited him a bit of a run with the Boston Bruins? If they were competing for that wild card spot, if they were one of the teams in a playoff spot in the division, no. But look at what's around you right now. And what's the harm of doing it? I see it two different ways. Say they perform well. Well, great. Then you give Lizell, Merkulov, Matt Patra, you give these guys who are supposed to be the future of your franchise. It's a bit of a bleak future, but they're supposed to be nonetheless, or at least that's what you're selling me on. At best, did they perform well? Great. Then you know you have one position in this ever-changing, ever-evolving lineup written in pen for next year. I know that Matt Patra will be somewhere in my opening 12 forwards when hopefully a season with a bit more hope starts in October of 2025. That's the best-case scenario. The worst case, guys that have been playing in the minors now for multiple seasons, you're not rushing along their development by giving them a 10-game run to end the season, in my estimation. You're giving them a chance to get a taste of what it takes to play in the NHL, and then you're sending them on their way at the end of the season and going, you need to be closer to this level by the time we get to training camp in September. And that's regardless of draft status, and that's regardless of prospect rank, that's simply based on merit. And guys who have done enough in their, not just 1 year, but multi-year professional careers, when you talk about some of these younger players who are now in year two, year three in Providence, you give them the chance to understand what it takes to play at the next level. And you know what? If they suck, oh well. Too bad is all I have to say to that. Ah, shucks, you're going to move your way down the standings and closer to a better draft pick this offseason. Ah, heavens. Well, what are we going to do with that? I see no downside. I really don't. Because it's not a big enough sample size where you're going to risk any kind of stunting in development. You'll learn what you need to know about these guys going into a crucial offseason for a Matt Patra who needs to stick on the Bruins roster next year. And a guy like Fabian Lizell, who also, again, is running out of runway. At what point are you just an AHL player? At what time are you just a guy who rides the shuttle between Boston and Providence and eventually you end up getting either an AHL-only deal or released and you catch on with another franchise? And then maybe you get a chance on a bad team to play some fourth-line minutes. This is your opportunity, and it's the first time that we've had this conversation since the 2006 season where you're out of the picture in the playoffs enough where you can actually focus on the future and not the present. So if you get the opportunity to give these guys a longer run, I hope we see Lizell, goal scoring or not, I hope we see him for a while. I hope we see Patra again. Find ways to get these guys in, have them play meaningful minutes, give them a little bit of taste on your special teams unit, second power play, second penalty kill. Situations where if you were a competitive hockey team, and God knows I wish you were, but you're not. You stink out loud. So you have a unique opportunity in front of you in the next 15 games or so in order to give these guys some run and really see what they're made of and see if it's worth being excited about what they can do. You see if, hey, can I put this guy in my lineup? Or should I be including him in a trade for a better player this offseason? Should I be packaging him with the first round pick that I got from Toronto for insert name here of player that immediately makes me better? And everybody's going to scream at the radio, a goalie. Not necessarily that, but I understand the frustration there. So a lot of different directions that you can go. Fascinating times in that this is uncharted territory for Don Sweeney and Cam Neely as the leaders of this Bruins franchise. It's not unknown waters for the franchise as a whole, but it's been a good 10, 15 years since we've had to have this conversation, maybe even longer, since we've had to talk about retooling, rebuilding, prospects, drafting, things that bad teams do. And Bruins fans, myself included, have been extremely lucky. I'm going to butcher the number, so I'm going to paraphrase the number, but I'm fairly certain the Bruins have the most wins of any franchise since the 2010 season in the regular season. So, again, we've been incredibly spoiled with the window of winning that I think went a little bit longer than it was supposed to. The Bergeron and Krejci one-year return and that incredible season under Jim Montgomery wasn't something that I think anybody had on their radar. The Swayman-Ullmark tandem being as good as it was and the multiple chances that you had with very good regular season teams over the last 2 years. I kind of thought the window was closing a few years before that. But it was extended, and you had a chance to win, and you didn't win. And that's plain and simple. And now you finally made the declaration at the trade deadline, I am slamming the window down on this era of Boston Bruins hockey. So the one thing that you can do to benefit your fans in the shorter term rather than the longer term is get an idea of what you have for the future. Guys that, as Bridget mentioned, aren't going anywhere, that are under team control for multiple years on rookie deals, team-friendly deals that allow you the cap flexibility to go and sign other veteran players for more money. The more that you can give those guys a chance to succeed so that you can write them in pen for your 2025-26 lineup, the better that it will be. Okay, that's it for the Boston Bruins conversation. Mike Reese, as he's been doing every single Sunday, put out his roundup for what's going on in Patriots Nation right now. The bluster this week was wide receiver related. The Patriots have added 6 players on offense so far this offseason, but how many move the needle? How many, when you look at them, go, that's the marquee name that I was waiting for? Defense, you added on every level, and they deserve credit for that. But offense has still left something to be desired. We thought for a moment, with reports about a certain visit happening at a certain stadium in a certain city in Massachusetts, Stephon Diggs, thought that that may be solved, but he left the building without a contract. So that question remains solved. We'll dive into the wide receiver pursuit for the New England Patriots and other to-do items for the Pats coming up right after Jacob Lasner gets us caught up.
Nerds! Today's episode is sponsored by NerdWallet's Smart Money Podcast. Life comes with big money questions. Are target date funds a smart or lazy way to invest? Should you pay off debt or invest extra cash? Can you deduct your dog as a home security system on your taxes? NerdWallet's Smart Money Podcast has the answers. Their finance journalists break down investing strategies, tax planning, and smart ways to build wealth and navigate big financial decisions. Work smarter, not harder, on your finances this year. Follow NerdWallet's Smart Money Podcast wherever you listen.
Thumbtack presents the ins and outs of caring for your home. Out. Uncertainty. Self-doubt. Stressing about not knowing where to start. In. Plans and guides that make it easy to get home projects done. Out. Word art. Sorry, live, laugh, lovers. In. Knowing what to do, when to do it, and who to hire. Start caring for your home with confidence. Download Thumbtack today.
Take me out to the ball game.
What are you doing?
Did you know DirecTV has the most MLB games?
So you're singing?
Yeah, they put your favorite teams front and center right when you turn it on. Buy me some cold cuts and flapjacks.
Those aren't even the words.
I'm allergic to peanuts.
Stream DirecTV, home of the most MLB games. Visit DirecTV.com. Claim based on total games offered on national and regional sports networks. RSNs available with choice package or higher. Availability of RSNs varies by zip code and package.
It's no surprise that facial hair is personal. It grows from your face. That's why Dollar Shave Club makes the razors, but you make the rules. Whether you're going smooth shaven or maintaining a beard, Dollar Shave Club offers shave and grooming products that are always high quality, but never overpriced. Dollar Shave Club products are now available everywhere. Or visit their site right now for 20% off $20 or more and get your products delivered right to your door. Visit dollarshaveclub.com/shaveup and use promo code SHAVEUP for 20% off $20 or more. And remember, whatever you shave, welcome to the club.
I'm Jordan Robinson, host of the new podcast, The Women's Hoop Show. Each episode, I'll be joined by a rotating group of women's basketball experts to talk WNBA, college hoops, the new Unrivaled League, and the shifting landscape of the sport. The game is growing, and so are we. Listen to and follow The Women's Hoop Show and Odyssey Podcast, available now for free on the Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
Up on what's trending. That was Tommy Curran, NBC Sports Boston on WEEI Afternoons on Thursday afternoon, addressing the news that was new as of Wednesday night into Thursday that Stephon Diggs had visited with the New England Patriots in Foxborough. Back here on WEEI, Dan Ball with you. And that one area of the roster, well, there's really two that you can pick from, but the one that's more fun to discuss is the wide receiver position for the New England Patriots. Yes, I understand that the Patriots signed Mac Hollins. Ho-hum. A guy that had 300-some-odd receiving yards this season. Yes, was a reliable target for Josh Allen, but he strengthens his strength, does Mac Hollins, and not in a good way, where he gives you another down-the-depth-chart, certain-situation wide receiver. You are still without a true number one. You have nowhere near a number one on your depth chart right now. And it's pretty easy to argue that you don't currently have a number two wide receiver either. I guess you could say, well, Pop Douglas, maybe he makes the step. He takes a step in his third year. Okay, that's an if. Kayshon Booty, Kendrick Bourne, are they a number two on a playoff team? Are they a number two wide receiver? Are they a guy who you're saying, I can write you in pen for 800 receiving yards or more? Are you sniffing at that? To be a number two receiver, you need to, in my opinion, at least you and 1,000 yards need to at least be hanging out. You don't need to get there, but you at least need to, I don't know, trick me, make me think about it, make me dream. So if that's not the case, you're not a number two. So right now, out of that group, Booty, Bourne, Pop Douglas, Mac Hollins, Jalen Polk, Javon Baker. Jeez Louise. That's 3, 4, 5, 6 cut and cut. And assign however you so choose. So I'm sorry. When Stephon Diggs comes and visits the New England Patriots, and all I hear all day is complaining and moaning about how the guy's a bit of a head case from time to time, are we really in a position to pick and choose right now? When you've been left without a dance partner this entire offseason, save for Mac Hollins, at the most important position for your up-and-coming now second-year quarterback in Drake May. And I say Drake May and not Joe Milton because I know people love to debate that as well. You should be trying to do what you can to help your most important asset on your roster. And you have not signed a wide receiver that's actually talented at what they do and can actually be a playmaker, a guy that opposing defensive coordinators actually have to game plan around. That's the bar for entry. If you're not that tall, you can't ride the ride. If defensive coordinators aren't game planning around at least one player on the Patriots offense, not named Drake May, how can you sit here and say, well, this has been a slam dunk of an offseason? So that brings me back to Stephon Diggs. And I found the conversation around him this week to be really interesting because I thought fans were looking at this from a different angle than I would have. The conversation immediately went to, well, he's a head case, he's bad for the culture, he's going to be a problem in the locker room. He's going to be a headache, this, that, the other thing. It was all personal stuff. And I do know that Stephon Diggs' reputation follows him around to wherever he's going to go for the remainder of his career. Assuming he doesn't re-sign in Houston or Buffalo or Minnesota, he's going to be on the fourth team of his career. But I want to explain this, because coming from a radio station in New York, I actually have a unique view on what happened with Stephon Diggs in Buffalo, because we covered it as it was happening. He, for the beginning of his tenure with Josh Allen, was nothing near a headache. It was a bit of an ugly divorce at the end of his time in Minnesota. He wanted to be paid what he thought he was due, and Minnesota disagreed. And so there was a bit of a falling out at the end of that tenure, and he ends up getting moved to Buffalo, and he signs a very rich contract with the Buffalo Bills. But for the first 2.5 seasons of his tenure in Buffalo, Josh Allen to Stephon Diggs was automatic. And there is a lot of what Josh Allen has become as a passer in the NFL that can be tied back to his time working with Stephon Diggs as his number one wide receiver. There was no whisper of, hey, this guy's becoming a headache again. I'll tell you what changed it. It was the firing of offensive coordinator Ken Dorsey and the promotion of offensive coordinator Joe Brady. That change in the Bills' offense is what changed things beyond repair for Stephon Diggs. And the reason for that is because Joe Brady came in with a much different theory on how the Bills should spread the football around. And it was just that, spread the football around. Don't force every single pass to Stephon Diggs, so you're targeting him 10, 11, 12 times a game, maybe more. Don't force it and throw interceptions. Throw the ball to who is open, quite simply. In Joe Brady's offense, every wide receiver is more or less on equal footing. And that's why you saw a Bills team in 2024 that got notably worse in terms of the talent they had on their offense, yet they were the best version of themselves with Josh Allen at the helm. It was because between Khalil Shakir and Mac Hollins, who was brought in, and Amari Cooper, who was brought in at the deadline, and their two tight ends, Dalton Kincaid and Dawson Knox, they spread the ball around evenly. They had a good run game. They allowed Josh Allen to create with his legs, and that spreading of the ball on offense worked wonders for Buffalo this year. And that was something that upset Stephon Diggs. It was a change from being a consistent 1,000-yard receiver, money in the bank kind of player, to now now I kind of have to fight and scrap for what's mine. I'm not just guaranteed to be getting the ball. I have to be doing what I can to get myself open. And even then, if the game plan doesn't allow for it, I'm not going to get my cookies today. And that pissed him off. And that ended ultimately with the divorce between those two sides soon after. So, I say all of that to say this. You're not bringing in a guy who is a headache from the outset. You're bringing in a guy who can become a headache if things don't go his way. So that is why one-year contracts exist. And that's what I would be advocating for here. And I would be surprised, given the fact that he's coming off of a torn ACL, that if he would get anything more than that. And I think that's really where the conversation about Stephon Diggs should be. I don't really care about the issues that he's had with other teams, because those are completely different circumstances than he's entering right now. Both in Minnesota and Buffalo, he was near the top of the league in terms of receiving yards. He was highly regarded among the elite wide receivers in the league. He's still a productive receiver in this league, we think. But now he's coming off of a year in Houston where he was a piece, but not the piece. He was still seventh in receptions, by the way, when he got hurt. I saw that number when it was reported that he was visiting. He was seventh in receptions in the NFL. So he was still plenty productive, but he wasn't as much of a traditional X receiver. He was playing more on the inside, opening up room for Nico Collins and Tank Dell and the incredible weapons they have down there in Houston. He played a role, and he played it well. And if he didn't get hurt, who knows what the future would have held for him in Houston. But Houston restructured his contract that he had signed in Buffalo specifically so that they could get out of the remaining years of the deal. They restructured it down to a one-year deal with non-guaranteed money after that, and now Stephon Diggs is a free agent. And I would imagine, and I would hope, because it's obvious, that reality is setting in for what Stephon Diggs is going to want from his next contract. No longer, I hope, because this helps the Patriots immensely if they do choose to get into business with Stephon Diggs. I hope that he will understand that he is no longer one of the league's elite receivers, but he can still be a damn good one and be a very important piece for the development of Drake May. What I would be worried about is how does a player bounce back from such a catastrophic injury like that? In a position where you need to be explosive, you need to be able to cut, you need to be able to turn on a dime, does he bounce back as quickly? And I'm sure that's a large part of the conversation that's happened between he and the Patriots and any other teams that he has been with at any points during this offseason. So all of that diatribe to come to the conclusion that out of the options that remain for the New England Patriots, I don't understand why people were so banged up about Stephon Diggs being in the building. This is a guy that on a one-year incentive-laden contract can do a hell of a lot of good for your young quarterback because there is a sample size. I had to hear all through the end of the season as the Bills were playing the Patriots. I had to hear that pie in the sky comparison of, oh, you see a lot of Josh Allen potential in Drake May just blowing smoke up where the sun don't shine there. However, if you believe that to be true, if you believe that Drake May is a strong and accurate passer who can also use his legs, who can use his body to create space for himself, who can be a dynamic dual threat quarterback like Josh Allen is, why not copy and paste the same strategy that helped Allen grow into the passer that he is? I don't see any harm with that. For 1 year, you're not signing him to a 4 year, you know, $150 million contract or whatever wide receivers are going for now. You're not signing him to T. Higgins money. You're not making even a Brandon Ayuk type commitment to this player. You're simply signing a useful player and you hope that you can get a mutually beneficial relationship. It's an opportunity for Diggs to get a bigger role in an offense that he would probably get almost anywhere else in this league. It's an up-and-coming team with an up-and-coming quarterback, a new head coach, some renewed belief in where the franchise is going, and you can be a number one in a league where you may not quite have number one stuff anymore. Do it for a year, prove that you can still do it, go back on the open market in 2026, and you know what? Maybe by then, the Patriots will be able to actually land a true number one wide receiver. Maybe in 1 year's time, with Drake May working with Josh McDaniels for a year and continuing to grow as a passer and as a leader of the offense, and Mike Vrabel reinstilling some culture into that building as it seemed to kind of slip through the cracks last year, maybe at that point, the Patriots will become less, as Tommy Curran put it, like Siberia and more like a place where you can get a true number one wide receiver. In the interim, your options are extremely limited. You have to take what's in front of you and you have to try to make the most of whatever's available to you. So I went and looked. And this is all, by the way, coming off of a conversation that was started by Mike Reese of ESPN and his weekly column about the New England Patriots. So make sure you go give that a read. He does a tremendous job covering the team. Available wide receivers on the free agent market as it currently stands Sunday, March 23rd, 2025. Stephon Diggs at 31 years old, Keenan Allen at 32, Amari Cooper at 30, Deontay Johnson at 28, Tyler Lockett at 32, Robert Woods at 32, Josh Reynolds 30, Nelson Agholor 31, and it gets worse from there. You can throw Elijah Moore in there if you want. He's 24. If there's some kind of magic left in that tank, I'm not sure. I hear that list, and why would anybody be advocating for anybody else? Keenan Allen cannot keep himself on the field. And he's on the wrong side of 32, by the way. He's going to be 33, I think, by the time the season starts. Tyler Lockett had statistically his worst season since 2017 when he played like half the year. 600 receiving yards and 2 touchdowns on that offense where it was just lob it up there and somebody's going to catch it. He's on the wrong side of productivity. Also, midway through his age 32 year in life. Amari Cooper, again, fine, but seems to be, Phil Perry reported that, you know, he had spoken with people across the league who thought that physically Amari Cooper was cooked. Deontay Johnson at 28, throw a dart. Maybe you can develop him into something. Maybe you can salvage what was left of a once promising career for Elijah Moore. I'm sorry, those options stink. They really do for what you're trying to accomplish, which is a number one option for Drake May. I just don't see the harm for 1 year of Stephon Diggs. And I tell you what, maybe that visit was all just a ploy for Diggs in the first place to try to garner up a bit more interest, as it's now mid-March, ticking towards late March. We're into the spring, and he is still without a home for next season. I'm hoping that he took that meeting earnestly and really meant it and was genuinely interested in what the Patriots had to offer. It could have just been a meeting to say that he got a meeting to try to get on the radar of some teams that I guess are a bit more desirable, as New England just does not seem to fit into that category currently. You know what fixes that issue? You know what could probably solve that problem that you have? Money. And the Patriots still lead the league in available cap space. If you can put a number down for 1 year, incentive laden, guaranteed, non-guaranteed money, games played, snaps played, however you want to structure it, you should not just be offering a 1 year deal for fully guaranteed. Can you get the deal done without doing that? I don't know, but you shouldn't, because there's a lot of question marks about this player from a health perspective. I just don't think the ego and the issues that he's had with past teams, I don't think that thinking applies to this current situation, given where the player is right now in his career and where the New England Patriots are right now as a franchise and how those two would go together. Still plenty of questions to be answered. That's just one position. Left tackle also hasn't been answered by the Patriots. There are same deal as wide receiver. There are players that can play the position, but there are guys who, when you see them at the top of the depth chart, you go, oh, we're trying that again? Didn't we already see time and time again that this does not work? So there's still plenty of work to be done. And that also turns one eye onto the NFL draft, which is now just over a month away. Patriots at number 4. Will Travis Hunter fall? Is that the wide receiver answer? I hope it's not the only answer, because I'm not willing to risk Drake May's sophomore season on Travis Hunter potentially being good enough to play wide receiver and cornerback, or potentially not being good enough to play either full-time at the NFL level. Maybe that's what they're looking at. Do you like Will Campbell at 4? Do you trade down for Will Campbell at 7? Is Armon Membu on your board at that point? Is there a tackle that's worth being taken at number 4? Can any rookie tackle play left tackle in the NFL for the first year with no safety net behind him? I don't know. All I know is this. By the time the draft comes around in 1 month, I would like more answers at wide receiver and left tackle than we currently have, because I would not like to just rely on a somewhat weak draft class this year in order to solve two of the biggest positions, the two biggest positions for Drake May as he goes into his second year. 617-779-7937. Are you pro or anti Stephon Diggs as the wide receiver solution for the New England Patriots? And what's the biggest thing on your to-do list right now for New England as they continue to move through their offseason? We move through our number one here on WEEI. Don't forget Red Sox coming up at 1:05, and then some NCAA March Madness action later in the afternoon. We've got more right after this. My man Jacob Lasner always keeping me guessing on the return tunes, our rejoins, so to speak, which I appreciate. 617-779-7937. Let's go to the phones to continue the Patriots conversation. Chris is in Worcester. Good morning, Chris. How are you?
Good. How are you?
I'm doing well. What do you got?
I want to talk about the receiver situation here in the draft, and
I think, you know, a lot of people are talking about, you know, we don't have a number one wide receiver. And if you look at Kayshon Boutte and his Demario Douglas' numbers last year, how many yards did they have? 500 or 600, something like that? I think they both had about 600.
Yeah, right around
and
there.
If you now think if Drake May had started from the beginning, how many? I think both of them would probably have came closer to about 1,000 yards if he had started from the beginning. I wouldn't be amiss to say that they could probably, you know, at least 800 or 900, I'd say, between each of them. And, you know, so I think I think it's more important that we get a left tackle in this draft because, you know, also, you know, if he had more time to, you know, throw the ball, you know, that's another, you know, reason why these guys could have gotten open and we could have gotten, you know, more production out of our wide receiving corps. You know, I do think we do have some good talented young guys. Obviously, yeah, we do need to get that one good wide receiver in there for the draft, you know, whether it's Ted McMillan or whoever.
Right.
But I think a lot of people haven't really I haven't heard anybody mention the fact that, you know, these guys, you know, they could have been better than what they were and they could have put up more yards than they did.
All right, Chris, thank you for the call. Always appreciate it. Pop Douglas finished with 621 receiving yards and 3 touchdowns last year. Kayshon Boutte, 589 with 3 touchdowns. Kendrick Bourne, 305 with 1. And then your tight ends were the most important part of your offense. Hunter Henry led the team. Just going to let that sink in for a moment. Led the team with 674 receiving yards and 2 touchdowns. Austin Hooper was fourth, 476. So, again, you have... Pardon me. You have useful players on this roster, and it's a point well taken. You know, Drake May finished his rookie season 13 games, 12 starts, 3-9 record. Yeah, I know how many he was actually, you know, directly responsible for winning. 15 touchdowns, 10 interceptions, and finished with 2,276 yards. So there is an argument to be made that maybe those numbers tick up a little bit. Are we talking 800 yards? I think that's maybe a little bit strong. Compared the comparison between Drake and Jacoby Brissett or Joe Milton, whoever was in there. But, yeah, maybe you could have gotten another 50, 60, 70 yards. I think the difference is a bit more negligible than Chris was giving them credit for. But the point is well taken that if it was a full season of Drake May with those guys, you'd at least see a 700-yard receiver. I'll say that. But, again... You know, we're talking about teams like the New York Giants that are led by 700-yard receivers. Before having Malik Nabers the last, like, 5 years, their leading receiver was Darius Slayton, and he had 700-something yards. Like, that's not... I'm trying to elevate this offense because to this point in the offseason, you've done things to considerably upgrade your team and upgrade your offense. You brought in Mike Vrabel. You bring back Josh McDaniels for his third tour. It seemed like you were investing in the best available, in your estimation, and bringing in the best available to try to help this offense, and now you've done nothing of substance to actually continue helping an offense that was, it's too inconsistent. Too inconsistent, and I can't comfortably rely on any of the guys that were mentioned. Boutte, Douglas, Bourne. I can't comfortably rely on any of them to really take a step in production, take a big enough step in production for this team to be considered a playoff contender. So that's the bar that I'm trying to set. Will this offense run fine as currently constructed? Save for the left tackle position, which is also a point well taken. Yeah, it'll run fine. I'm not trying to have it run fine. I want Drake May to take a step. I want this offense to take a step. I want defensive coordinators to struggle the game plan for the New England Patriots again. Because you don't do that right now. You have a bunch of guys that are fine. And you have a bunch of guys that have a certain ceiling. And you have a quarterback that has a much higher ceiling than the players around him. So... You don't want to bring in two players? All right, fine by me. You can maybe trust that, let's say Pop Douglas, just because of his age and potential. maybe he's the guy that can take the next step. He was at 621 with three touchdowns. Maybe he's your 800-yard receiver this year, God willing. So you don't want to bring in two, that's fine. You got to bring in one. You have to bring in one. You have to bring in a veteran who, even though maybe he's not elite at present, has been at some point in his career. There's just something different about bringing in elite talent. And the comparison that was made by Mike Reese in his story, and no, they're not the same player, and he admits that. They have nowhere near the same resume in terms of accolades and just being regarded amongst the NFL's best of all time. The comparison was Randy Moss, a guy who had questions around, you know, the locker room and culture and all the kind of things that we've been peddled this offseason. But it certainly seemed to work pretty good then. So why not run it back? One guy for 1 year. What is really the harm is my main question. Okay, we have Red Sox baseball coming up in the 1 o'clock hour, so we transition over to the Sox in the 12 o'clock hour. Among the topics on the table, a Garrett Crochet extension that is not on the table. Tanner Houck has been letting up everything under the sun, and the rest of the notes around the starting rotation, plus a situation unfolding with Masataka Yoshida that I honestly don't think I've ever seen before. Can the Red Sox be a bit more obvious with what they're trying to pull off with Masataka Yoshida right now? All that plus your calls at 617-779-7937. Up next here on WEEI.